People have noted how ironic it is that in a teaching that emphasizes not self, that we have some of the earliest spiritual autobiographies of the world. The Buddha talking about his quest for awakening, his finding awakening. Told very much in terms of, this is what I did. And looking at what I had done and seeing that it hadn't given the results I wanted, I tried something else. That was the pattern. When you think of it in other terms, though, it's not ironic at all, because the Buddha's main teaching was karma. We suffer because of our actions, but we can find the end of suffering because of our actions. That's understanding those actions, the suffering actions, and then the actions of the path. That's what opens the way to the end of suffering. And in doing an action, you have to take responsibility for it. After all, the Buddha said, if you felt simply that things were happening on their own, without any input from yourself, that would make a path impossible. Whether it came from a creator God or simply past actions, if you chalked all of your experience of pleasure and pain up to something aside from yourself, what you're doing right now, there would be no path possible. Now, this goes against a teaching you hear every now and then, that if you come to the path with the attitude that I am going to do the path, you're coming from wrong view, and that taints everything you're going to try to accomplish. You have to have the attitude, there's nobody here doing anything. The path is just developing out of causes and conditions. That's simply awareness, seeing things arising. That's all there is there. That's the enlightened way to approach the path. But what happens in an attitude like that is whatever definition of self you might have goes underground. You start identifying with the awareness, or start identifying with the awakened awareness. And that way you can let go of what may have been a neurotic self and turn into an overblown but very vague self. And one of the whole points of the practice is to see exactly where your sense of self comes in, when it's skillful, when it's not, and how to train your unskillful self to be more skillful. Of course, the emphasis is not on focusing on the self, but it's always there in the background. Think of the Buddha's instructions to Rahula when he told him to reflect on his actions before, during, and after. In each case, Rahula was to take responsibility for the actions. This action that I want to do, that's beforehand. This action that I am doing, that's how you think when you look at the action as you're doing it. This action that I have done, that's your reflection afterward. The I is there, because you're taking responsibility. And this is not just a sop for a little child's mind. And the Buddha said, wisdom begins, discernment begins with the question, what having been done by me will lead to long-term harm and suffering? What having been done by me will lead to long-term wealth or unhappiness? There's still an agent there. And the whole point is to get this agent to take responsibility and see how to improve his or her actions. If you deny that there's an agent there from the very beginning, you might call it self-bypassing, just like spiritual bypassing. There's an important element that's being missed, that you're skipping over. The path is one of taking responsibility for your actions, for reflecting on them, for improving them. And in the skills that are developed as you do that, you develop a more skillful sense of self. You don't let go of your sense of self until it doesn't have any more use and has many uses on the path. And you don't let go of it until it's been trained. If you try to let go of it first, before it's been trained, then this untrained self is still going to lurk around different places in your awareness and show its ugly head here and there. If you try to let go of it out of fear or loathing, say, I don't like myself, it's selfish, short-sighted, conceited. I'm going to replace it with an enlightened self. Well, your enlightened self is basically created out of your preconceptions about what enlightenment might be. You don't get the genuine article until you've taken your unskillful self and you've developed it. It's like developing the body. Your body is weak. I don't like my weak body. I want to throw it away and find a strong body. It doesn't work. You're still going to have that weak body, no matter how much you may imagine a strong body. What you do is you take your weak body and you exercise it. You feed it properly, look after it, and it gets stronger. Now here, of course, the analogy breaks down. There does come a point where you don't need the self anymore, and you let go of the self when it's most developed. In other words, where it's very precise, very meticulous, very mature in its ability to reflect on its own actions, so mature that it can see the activity of creating a self as being an unskillful action. And to get there requires patience, requires honesty, requires powers of observation. Because your sense of self can hide when things are going the way you like, everything's going smoothly. It doesn't seem to appear at all. It's when you meet up with conflict, meet up with challenges, that's when it will have to come out. Which is why a lot of people who say they have no sense of self as they practice try to practice in a way that's stress-free. They don't push themselves too hard. They say this is the middle path. But remember the Buddha's analogies, victory. The practice is a battle. The practice is a course of long course of mastering a skill. It's going to be challenging. And you're going to have to rely on that sense of self that is reliable. If it's immature, it gives up. Retreats. But if it has a strong sense that this is the one way for true happiness, as the Buddha said, let go of things that are not yours and they will be for your welfare and happiness. You can use that sense of self as part of your motivation for practicing. Then as the path matures, you mature. And that's when you can start letting go in a very radical way. And at that point, you're not really thinking about self or not self. You're simply thinking about the fact that there's stress. And there's something you're doing that's causing the stress. You get to the point where there's the path of staying or the path of going. And in space and time, those are the only two alternatives. And you look for another alternative, an alternative that does not involve your doing. And because you've been very sensitive to what you're doing, you know it for sure. This is something different, radically different. You come out of that experience, and that's the experience that cuts away at the fetter of self-view. As I said, there's still some conceit left, the idea that I am still lingering around the aggregates. But the sense that I am this with regard to any of the aggregates, either I am one of the aggregates or a combination of the aggregates belong to me, I am in the aggregates and the aggregates are in me, that's cut through because the experience has shown you that there is an awareness, there is a dimension that has no aggregates at all, and you can experience it. To cut through self-view, not by willing it away or trying to think in a new paradigm. The experience has forced it on you. It's a realization of a truth in a way that allows for no denial. So up until that point, make a skillful use of yourself. As you master the craft. There's a book called The Craftsman. It talks about how people develop a certain maturity as they develop a craft. You want to take that same attitude toward your practice. Yourself becomes more mature. Mature enough so that when the time comes to let go, it can let go. And there's nothing left lurking around. You haven't bypassed anything. You followed the path consistently all the way to your first taste of awakening. So you don't get there by any bypassing. You get there by staying on the path all the way.